Welcome to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast. My name is Bhairav Patel.
And I'm Alan Clark.
And we're joined by Sanjay Rakshit. And we're basically going to talk to Sanjay about his journey from a startup to academia to a business and back to academia. So Sanjay is an expert in AI, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about AI, machine learning, what it's all about, and how it can help us, how we can save the world, as they say.
I just say I'm feeling slightly exposed here. I'm going to get two tech guys talking about tech. So Sanjay, maybe we start off by just explaining what actually is AI?
So artificial intelligence, would a very simple term, is to get machines to be intelligent. So humans, what we do is we process information and then we extrapolate some knowledge from it and then we make decisions from there. So providing a machine with the ability to process information, extract knowledge, and make decisions is what is artificial intelligence.
So is there a role in artificial intelligence for, this is what I really struggle with, the creative leap, which is I can do analysis, and then I look at the information I have, and then I extrapolate that into a decision. Can machines do that creative part?
That is the goal at the moment, is to try and get machines to do that. Now, information is data, and hence the prominence of data. So you've got information, lots of data. The trick is to extract the right knowledge from it, because you could extract various insights from data. We do that. And then from there, make decisions. So all the machine learning, the technique for learning from data is machine learning. There are various ways of machine, various models of machine learning. So the holy grail is to get machines to extract information, understand it, and then take decisions. The entire research in the artificial intelligence area is about this, about how efficiently, how reliably we can get machines to process data, extract knowledge, learn from the data, and thereby make decisions going forward. So this is what the study, the research is all about. This is what applications are all about, where they learn from data and then.
If you could point to a real life use of AI right now, what would be a good example?
But the most common one is Alexa or is smart speakers. It recognizes speech. So when you give it a command, it understands and it satisfies, it carries out the command. So it has to learn to understand, recognize speech. So speech is just a signal. It's an audio signal, pressure waves, or air waves. It picks up its microphone, picks up the speech signal, that then gets translated into text at some point. And then the command or the content of the speech is understood and then it's executed. So that is an example of.
Thank you. That makes things a little bit more clear for me.
So how did you get involved in this? So obviously when you started off, you had a startup, right? And was there any kind of AI machine learning based in that?
Yeah, so I got started in it when I was with PayWizard, where we introduced the a data insight based product line. But I quickly realized there that just intuitively learning it or learning it by osmosis, if you like, is not the right thing to do at the time, because AI and this data science, et cetera, at the time, even now, is still a very new area. It's still an active area of research. So some sort of formal education is required because of the professors there, my cohorts, the postdocs, there's lots to learn. So from there, I went into, and we co-founded a startup. It was a healthcare startup where we were collecting respiratory signals, rates, and then extrapolating any risks to the health from there. And that required signal processing, learning and prediction. Again, I realized that I didn't know enough to, as a CTO, a co-founder, to build a product that would satisfy and solve the problem. So at the time I decided that, because we were still working, I was still working on it, I decided that I had to go away and study. And I had to go and actually understand from the basics as to what AI was all about, what was machine learning was all about, what robotics was all about, signal processing was all about. So I was lucky to get a place at Edinburgh Uni. And then that's when I started studying.
So when you say that you didn't feel that you knew enough, are you ever going to know enough? Because of course you then went back into, so obviously you went to Martin Curry and then after that you went back into academia. So is this a never ending cycle?
It is. But what it did was, formal education did, was that it laid the foundation. So the foundation was the key, was to understand what it was all about and the simplicity behind it. So I don't think there will ever come a point, at least in my lifetime, I think, where someone could claim that they know everything about machine learning and artificial intelligence that there is to be known. But if the foundation is there, then it'll give us the opportunity, the ability to understand the problem, to understand the solutions, to understand the progression in this field, to appreciate that what is good today is obsolete tomorrow, and whatever is new will still be tied back to the main foundation. It'll just be another way of doing it. It'll give us that appreciation.
So apart from obviously the knowledge that you gain by going to do the degrees, what else do you feel it's added to you as a person now wanting to go maybe back into business, you know, whatever it is, you're starting a business or going back into corporate life?
So, you know, spent 20 years after my undergrad. So things have moved on. We learn on the job. We learn from our teams. We learn from our peers. But going back to uni, you also get to understand hardcore what's coming, because it's still an academic. It's still an academic. It's still in research. It's still in flight, if you like. So that's one thing. Second, personally, I felt that I didn't do much justice or to the young ones that we have right now. They are fantastic. They're absolutely brilliant. There's so much to learn from them. So, you know, I always have made the mistake in the past, I've seen others make the mistake too, of hiring some really, you know, smart undergrads or young professionals and telling them what to do. I think it should be the other way around now, that we are hiring young graduates, fresh graduates, even young professionals. And then, you know, okay, it's good to guide them from experience on certain aspects, but they come with a wealth of knowledge, which is today, which is current. So rather than tell them what to do, it's probably learn from them and probably give them a chance to demonstrate what they could do, give them the problem. And I found that more often than not, that I was learning from it all the time of things that I thought I knew about, but I didn't really, because my knowledge was obsolete and they were current. So that's one thing I took away, that my respect, my group, for my cohorts and the younger generation, the professional work grew that point. The third thing was the proximity to the professors, the postdocs, the lecturers, you know, the discussions with them wasn't just restricted to the coursework. It was also the state of the art, what was coming, what was not working, what they foresee coming, you know, so that again widens the horizon a lot more. So you start to appreciate the subject, the field as a whole, as opposed to just a couple of things that I could have picked up from various courses online. So this is what I think really helped me get up to speed with some of these things, which I think, coupled with my experience that I already have, I'd be able to contribute better to businesses that I get a chance to work with.
So thinking back to when you set up your first business, what was the motivation back then? Was it that you had a lot of knowledge and you wanted to apply it? Was it that you identified a problem and you thought, I can solve that problem? Was it hey, this is a fast way to get really, really rich. What was the motivation?
Fast way to get rich. Well, that sounds good. No, that wasn't the case at the time. I think it was the knowledge that we had. And my chairman was my ex-CEO, Jonathan. So, you know, the idea was that one was the knowledge that I had, I could apply, had probably more freedom because it was a startup. Two is in a startup, you are not stuck to just doing one function, one or two functions. You know, the business aspect becomes stronger. As an exec, as a member of the exec, I found that we were running the business, of course, you know, we were leading the business, but the hard work of getting funding, of setting up the business was already done, which is a great experience to have to run a business. But in a startup, all that experience came into, you know, I learned all that, where how to get a business off the ground, what is required, grants, you know, R&D tax credits. I knew about tax credits and favors, but the grants that we would need to apply for, how we could get funding without giving away equity. So these are the aspects of a business that I learned from a startup. That was a motivation for me, because just tech wasn't doing it for me. Just product wasn't doing it for me. I always liked the business aspect. For me, flogging what we build, solving the problem, making it a successful product for customers is what excited me, not just technology.
That sounds like a driving interest or an inquiring mind about there's lots of parts of this going on. Is that what allowed you to succeed at that level, the fact that you were able to look at all of these dimensions simultaneously?
Yes. So that was the key motivation. Second was that once I got into that, various aspects, I realized that my biggest shortcoming is that I can't wing it. I knew that before, but that became even more prominent. And I'm most comfortable when I know something about what I'm talking about. Not everything, but something about it. Because that way I can contribute, I can also understand what's being said. So what working and setting up a startup did was, other than working with some brilliant minds who are co-founders, was also that how much I still needed to learn, especially in the industry we were getting into, the artificial intelligence, the use of data, the use of machine learning in healthcare. So it gave me also the ability to take another risk in my career. I was 40 years old. Going from PayWizard to a startup was still working, right? I was still working. But at 40, when people around me said, don't do it, Sanjay, you're 40 years old, you'll not get a job. If you don't, if you leave a job, you take that risk and say, right, I'm going to take a break and go and study. Think joining a startup or setting up a startup, working in a startup allowed me to take that risk, because I had taken a risk already by leaving a well-paying job and then working on forming a startup. So I think it was not just business, it was not just education, it was the attitude, the outlook towards looking at the profession, as something that I like doing, as opposed to a job. And that's what
there's an interesting parallel there, because I was 42 when I left a job to go and do a startup with absolutely no guarantee of success. But it was exactly that. I left a job, a defined role that was going to be that defined role that meant certain parameters, to go and do something completely new, when I knew less about what I was facing than I actually knew about it. But as a result, I would just have to go and learn loads of new things. So I'm really interested on that point of view, or your experience of that. When you were doing your developing your startup, did you follow any given methodology or model for how to develop a business?
So the business aspect of it, of development, I was mainly I was mainly watching and learning from my chairman, Jonathan, who set up PayWizard. You know, he's had a very successful business there. So, and there was other two founders, co-founders, who were doctors, had had their own businesses too. So from that point of view, my contribution towards the forming of the business and ideas, and the methodology was very little because I was learning. It was also, so it was merely a fresh pair of eyes who'd never done this before asking the awkward questions. So now and again, I would be able to contribute and probably make the rest of us think about something that they would do anyway and probably change the model a little bit. But it was more mainly learning from that point of view.
I'm interested in terms of the art of developing a business, you learn from people that were around you. In terms of the science of developing AI, you felt you had to adopt an academic approach to that.
Because I did not have the luxury of having some AI experts to work with and learn from.
And had you had that, did you think you would not have done your master's?
If I had the kind of training I had from my co-founders in startup, from learning and running a business, in setting up a business, then perhaps not. Because this would mean that idea of the entire methodology, the science, the art of setting up a business is mature at the moment. It's been going on for years, right? But AI.
Oh, you see that, you know, if you Google startup models or business strategy development or business development, you get something like 500 million returns on Google. So there are tens of thousands of different models on how to do it.
Correct.
How can one ever know that we've got the right one?
Well, that is where it's the people we work with, right? So I had Jonathan, who had PayWizard. Co-founded the PayWizard 20 years ago, built it to be the biggest, it was MGT back then, the biggest employer of Fife. So I had a role model there, someone who's successful, who gave jobs to people, built a business, pivoted the business from a call center to a tech to a product-led business. So I didn't have to look any further there. I did not have such a role model to learn from in AI. And I realized, having been in technology, you know, that's my bread and butter. I'm a technologist who builds products. I knew that at that time I did not have that resource. I did not have that luxury of learning from somebody, but also knew this was new.
And is there something in the difference between art and science here, where science has an answer but art has an opinion?
Of course. And I would say that building a business and making it successful falls in the realms of art, because there is a science behind it, but not everybody who follows this process has a successful business. So there is an art, definitely. In AI, I would say it's still a science because it's still new. And then the reason I went back to uni was not just for AI, but also to have a reboot of my thinking, of meeting different people, understanding, etc. So I feel that in time to come, application of artificial intelligence to solve problems would also become an art, just like product development is an art. You know, there are product development life cycles, there are frameworks, there are marketing mixes. You know, there are various aspects that are laid and set in stone that if you follow, that helps build a product, but that doesn't translate to a successful product. There is an art aspect to it because it is not repeatable, same as business. So artificial intelligence at the moment is still in the realms of science because it is still being developed. It's still an area that is evolving rapidly as we speak. But I believe that in the next 5 or 6 years, we'd find that it would start moving into the realms of art. So already we've seen in schools, AI and machine learning being introduced. as optional subjects. So no, it's like computer science.
But I mean, our podcast is themed around entrepreneurship, and we engage with a lot of early stage and new entrepreneurs. What would be the most painful lesson that you've learned that you would share with an aspiring entrepreneur? The thing that you would say, be careful because this may happen to you.
And actually, we can add a flavor onto that. If there's someone thinking that they're going to start an AI-based or machine learning-based platform, product, whatever it is there something specific that you would say that they need to do differently from, let's say, if they're trying to run something else, a non-AI tech-based, data-based product?
Yeah, definitely. I would say the two things. So if it is from a problem-solving point of view, I would say pay very close attention to ensure that the problem that's being solved is an AI problem. Not try to shoe in AI into a problem so that one has an AI startup. You know, I've seen quite a few, I have advised a few of my friends regarding investments into startups. And I found that once you scratch the surface a little bit, they haven't spent enough time on understanding the problem. They spend more time applying AI. So that's the first one. Those investors are savvy. They would ask you the right questions and it soon be clear that we haven't spent much time trying to understand the problem. Second is, from a painful point of view, Alan, I don't think it was, I look at it as a painful thing. I would say that if you're going into startup, go in for the right reasons. You know, because it's like playing football or any sport for that matter. You know, you would have a chance of breaking a leg or damaging your knee, going to surgery. So they're all painful experiences, right? But if you enjoy playing football, then all that you take in your stride.
Ah.
So when you get into a startup, go in because you enjoy it. You know, I can say for myself, I love what I do. In the 20 years, I remember going back to uni and we ran up a flight of stairs and someone turned to me and said, "You're still 21. I said, "You know what? It's been 20 years I've been to the uni, but because I enjoyed what I did, 20 years flew by. So to get into startup, I really enjoyed the learning aspect, the contribution of the fact that I am doing something, you know, which I really enjoy. So then any challenges that come your way, however painful those challenges may be, you would take them all in your stride and just deal with them as an enjoyable experience. Don't know if that analogy works.
Absolutely. I think that's such valuable insight. If you don't believe you've got the passion and you're not motivated to really commit to it and believe you will enjoy the experience, it's the worst place in the world to be. You know, if you can't live with uncertainty, if you must have a really, really solid support, corporate support network, you'll never survive in a startup. I remember on the day that we signed our investment deal and did the acquisition that really kicked off our, not really, absolutely kicked off our business. I think one of the things my co-founder said was, when I asked him that question, he said, "Don't have a plan B, because there will be times on your journey that are so challenging that if there was an escape pod, I almost certainly would have jumped in it and gone. But you had to be committed, and you know what? That's what gets you through it. You can say, I am absolutely, absolutely committed to doing this."
Yep. So, Sanj, question for you. Do you think academics make good startup founders?
I don't know. I mean, that's a very, actually a sweeping statement if I said one way or the other. What I would definitely say is that from the academics that I worked and I studied with in the past 3 years and my two postgraduate degrees, I would say that they're very commercially savvy. And every startup needs different skills, especially in artificial intelligence startups. I firmly believe, I think we've talked about that before, that there has to be an academic endorsement because it is still an academic field. So an academic with a commercial mindset, fantastic. And the ones I've met so far, they all do have a commercial mindset. They keep an eye on the application of the research in the real world. So to answer your question, yes, I think they make good, very good startups. But however, they're not the only cog in the wheel for a startup. You need different skills, business, product, engineering, finance. You know, you need different skills to build that startup. So they on their own, or any of those cogs on their own, would not build a successful startup. You need the different skills to work together.
Two quick questions for me as we head towards the end of our time together. What businesses inspire you as a startup?
So could I respond to that slightly differently? So what excites me is an opportunity. Whether that opportunity is in a startup, is offered by a startup, or through a business, an established business. So the way I look at it is when I left Bayer and I got the opportunity to form this healthcare startup with Jonathan and co, it was the opportunity of setting a business up, and me contributing in the area that I was, a CTO, taking the technology and the product, that's what I had in mind, was R&D and product, you know, bridging that gap, but also learning. Business. So it was opportunity that I learned. Then when I'm from there, I went to academia to learn so that I could exploit and understand opportunities even better. Then I went to Martin Curry. Then the opportunity was to set up an R&D function in AI. It was an established business, but the opportunity was to set up a business within a business. They wanted to become a startup. They wanted to work like a startup, think like a startup, move tech into the central and make tech central to their business. So Martin Curry, that's where I was able to set up the AI function. Then from there, I realized I didn't know enough. I still needed to know a little more on my foundations. So I went back to uni to this time specialize in something I really, really feel, I really like, I really enjoy is speech and language processing. So I did another master's at that point in time. And then another opportunity, during that time I set up a little business, you know, it was to specialize in speech and language. So I could, the opportunity again was to contribute, to learn, to build products that can sell. So I believe that it is the opportunity that matters the most. If it is offered by a startup, by setting up a startup, great. If it is not, then it is offered by an existing business, great, because you could still run that opportunity like a startup.
And my final question, if there was one book or one podcast or one source of information or inspiration you would point an aspiring entrepreneur or an early stage entrepreneur to, what would that mean?
The book I really liked was Zero to One by Peter Thiel. He's the guy who was one of the guy forces behind PayPal. Now, that again, you know, that resonated because as an exec in PayWizard, I was helping running the business as a part of the exec team. But the business was already at one. It had launched. But the challenge of starting a business from zero to taking it to that level, I think that is an exciting and a fantastic learning experience. But that's the book I would recommend to anybody looking at a startup or any opportunity, you know, even setting up a new function, a new department within a business is a zero to one because it's never been done before. Someone's doing it. So again, it's back to the thought process, you know, of launching something, starting something that is sustainable, that this book would provide some insight into.
And obviously the Atom Ventures podcast is the best.
Yes, you've got some fantastic podcasts there, which I feel has really helped too.
Cool. Well, it's been great talking to you, Sanjay. It's been very informative, and it's been great to hear about your journey from corporate life into academia and what you've learned and how. Yeah, and I think, you know, especially for people who are listening to this and thinking about AI-based companies or even what AI is, this has been a big help for them.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sanjay.